Welcome to Day Zero Update for February 1st, 2026. I'm your host, Chris Sologi.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm General Victoria.
And yeah, we are in a new month. Very cold yep. month, but we'll be getting to a bunch of news as we have a bunch of March games have been announced.
Uh-huh.
We have some good industry news. Or good dumb industry news.
Yeah.
A person that nobody likes decided to show how pathetic they are now that they're not on major streaming platform.
Yeah,
we got GOG doing something very stupid, and we got GDC news about what's been going on with devs lately. So
yep,
we'll get to that stuff in a bit. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. And I'll kick it off here. I started the game The Seance of Blake Manor, a game on Steam that has gotten a lot of acclaim as like a detective adventure game, I would say. Maybe in the vein of like the Case of the Golden Idol, maybe a little bit of Return of the Oberdin to it. This comes from the studio that made the Dark Side Detective games.
Yeah.
Though this game looks markedly better than those. Not that those look bad or anything. Those are just a very specific style of 2D adventure game. This is more first...
Its art direction is like very like Mike Mignola-esque, like very Hellboy looking.
Yeah.
And it's
this
gorgeous.
This one's kind of a first-person adventure game.
Yeah.
With a very good... art style to it that really sets the mood really well. It's set in 1897 in Ireland, where you are a detective, Detective Ward, I think it is, and you've been sent a letter to come to this Blake Manor to sort of figure out why a guest went missing, where they might be, and who might be responsible for it. And they are in the process of about to have a seance that's apparently will, instead of the usual kind of seance of, you know, the ghost speaking through a medium, that kind of stuff, or through cards, or what, you know, crystal ball, that kind of stuff. This yeah. one claims that the ghost will appear in person and be, you know, visibly interactable for the people that show up there. And so all a very weird thing. And I managed to figure out why that is going to be a weird thing, because I got, I was exploring like the grounds before I went in. And you see like a spooky shadow that looks like somebody trying to wash clothes in the fountain before the shadow kind of disappears into ravens that that fly away. Kind of thing. You get vibes of there's something weird going on here. Maybe Cthulhu-esque, maybe just some sort of gothic horror kind of thing. But I managed to find a window that was kind of propped open and climbed in. And at the I don't think he's a manager necessarily. He's like the host of the manor, just keeps and everything, you know, moving smoothly. And he's like, what? You're not supposed to be here and me out of the event. And then so I've reached a fail state within like 10 minutes of starting the game, which is how you know it's a real good game. And right there, it tells you zero guests have been saved. And so it's like, oh, once I found about the seance, I'm like, oh, the seance is going to kill everybody. We have like 46 hours, I think, to until it happens. And from there, you're trying to talk to people and gather evidence of the various mysteries that are going on. And the interesting thing is your interactions with the environment and, you know, the various things and people around causes the clock to progress 1 minute for each thing. Almost everything. A lot of general things. It won't show a little 1 minute thing on it. So you can just look at a bunch of things pretty easily, but That's kind of a really interesting mechanic. So, like, you show up at 11 p.m. at night, and kind of unannounced because the I forget what is it. Like, you were not able to. You sent a message ahead, but their little tapper thing, I forget what that's called, was out of battery, and so you go and figure that out. I figured out the battery thing because it has literally a note next to it and how it works and all that. And I solved that. And that's a way that you use to trick the host guy to go into the separate room so you can go sneak into the room he was in, the one that I snuck in through the window, and find a letter and trying to figure out what the heck might have happened with this woman. And so you're, looking for letters and other potential evidence and all that. And yeah, the real interesting thing is that when you talk to people, it kind of pulls up kind of a classic computer RPG style dialogue bar on the right side of the screen. And you get to pick, dialogue options from there, and you pull up your evidence as things to show people, like, hey, what's up with this? You can also analyze people, so you can look at their outfit and be like, oh, what's up with this thing? What's up with this? And you learn more about them. And kind of a sign of the times, there's like a druid that shows up, complete with like antlers, like circlet around his head, a big fancy belt and a big staff and all that. And yeah, so I'm trying to figure out, like, what happened to this woman. And you get an hour to kind of look around the lobby here and go into a couple rooms. Luckily, you don't pass any time before that happens, but I was at the they said the room would be ready by midnight, and the time that it was ready, I was still in that room where I wasn't supposed to be. And so you can save, you can quick save, so you can do hard saves to see, like, what's going on. And maybe if you're clicking on a bunch of things, you're like, oh, I just wasted a bunch of time on things that don't give you evidence or any, story stuff going on. You can kind of go back and be like, all right, I know the things that are important here, and kind of save some time. So yeah, but I did that and, like, went out the door, and he's like, what were you doing in there? Get out of here, get your stuff and get the fuck out, basically. And I was like, all right. You had to climb out the window and come back in through the entrance. And then you get your room. There's some things to explore in there, and basically where I'm at, I'm in the morning, about to go to breakfast. Woke up at 8 a.m. and had time to kind of mingle with some people. And the first person you mingle with, this guy that's a skeptic about these things, and he's like, I think this woman is up to no good, and I need you to help me figure out, like, what's her deal, and try and get her dealt with. And he somehow had her key for her room. That's like another thing, like, you look up, the staff roll, the schedule for the events that are going to happen. And you have like a schedule of events and where people are going to be. You can find their personal schedules, in their rooms or whatever. And so you'll be able to know, like, oh, that she's not going to be in the room, so I can go in there for, this amount of time. She's hanging out in, like, the commons area of where all the rooms are at. And so, yeah, I go in there and I find a bunch of evidence of her potentially trying to steal somebody's magic. Like, the means that she's going to go through to do that, and that's, like, all really interesting stuff. And yeah, it's got a lot of good stuff going on. I'm about 2 hours in, 2 in-game hours in. I'm about at 9 a.m. where the breakfast time will be going on. So yeah, it's got a lot of good stuff. It's got some good voice acting. Not everything's voice acted, but you do get a good bit of it. You get some good Irish voice acting, and like actual Irish voice acting, not like Conan O'Brien exaggerated, ridiculous Irish voice acting. So I wouldn't put it past that there might be something like that at some point. But so far it's been my character is Irish, the host guy is Irish. I talked to the lady that's the suspicious lady, and she's American. And the guy that put on of talking to, or trying to figure out her deal, is French. So yeah, it's got a lot of that stuff going on. So yeah, it's pretty cool so far. So I'm looking to play some more of that. And yeah, you do have points where you gotta figure out solve like the mystery of like what was going on with this woman. It gives you a phrase with a bunch of blanks in it, sort of like
Yeah.
Case of the Golden Idol. And from there, it's very much like, is this, and it has so far two different colors for things. And you look through all the evidence that you've unlocked, it gives you like a big set of all the evidence and information you've gotten about them. It almost looks like
Yeah.
the game version of, the conspiracy board with all the rope, the string going around
Oh,
it.
yeah.
It links everything like that, and you see the names of different things, and some of them are verbs and some of them are nouns, so you fill it out correctly. It won't let you do this until you have the stuff to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a pretty interesting way of like figuring it out. I had trouble with one because it was a little tricky whether it's way the way the things worked, because it was like it was almost like you're given a blank sentence and like trying to figure out how it all went in the order. So I had to just kind of mess around with that a bit. That's maybe the one issue I have with it so far. But yeah, I've really enjoyed what I've seen so far, and definitely some weird shit going on. So I'm looking forward to see where crew has gone. So I've saved one person so far who said they will not be going to the seance. So that's one person that will not be dying, I assume.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to playing some more of that. And I think that's only on Steam at the moment, so
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they bring it to consoles, because it, as far as I can tell, you could play this with a controller just fine. I was just playing with
Yeah.
mouse and keyboard, but it seems like it should work fine with the controller. Because otherwise, it's just pretty basic first-person controls.
Yeah.
It does have a nice thing where you hold down the space bar to highlight the items you can interact with. You can know like what to bother with. And in the spooky part of this game, they have pumpkins here, or not pumpkins, jack-o'-lanterns, but they're made out of turnips, so they're like
Yeah.
really creepy and weird. So I assume
Yeah.
they don't really have pumpkins over in Ireland.
Well, I mean, that's actually what they used to make jack-o'-lanterns out of before, the Columbian Exchange, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Basically that or any kind of gourds they could get their hands on.
Yeah. And yeah, like the spooky stuff came in when I went to bed, as my character had a dream of like
Yeah.
a spooky hallway with a lot of red lighting and weird shit going on. You kind of like draw some diagrams that could probably turn into you drawing pentagrams or something at some point, but so far it was pretty basic shapes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a very cool game. I definitely recommend people checking it out. If you want something with a good detective mystery kind of vibe to it, as well as some spooky stuff going on,
Yeah.
so there's that. I've been playing more Ball Pits. Their new Regal update came out. It is stream showing off at least the stuff that dropped for me. There's two new characters. One that I think is called the Falconer, that essentially is a version of the twins or the couple, I forget what the character's name is, where that character, the he had two streams of balls that would shoot out, and they were mirrored essentially from where your characters were at on the board. But the Falconer, the falcons that are shooting the balls are on the opposite ends of the board, so the left
Yeah.
wall and the right wall. And so the shared cursor they have kind of dictates where they're aiming. So if you're aiming more to the side, like the way that I would typically try to aim my shots here, is that I would aim as far of a weird angle as I could get to kind of get the most area covered for that. And you can kind of do this, but it only work for one side. The other side, the ball shots would be going essentially straight up. So it's kind of needing you to keep it more in the middle of the field, or both to kind of have a bit more of a symmetrical arc to them.
Yeah.
So that's a really neat kind of change up there. The other guy, I believe, is called a Carasaur. And essentially, his whole thing is that you would have the balls that you're shooting around would essentially rotate around the character as they come into your range. And so this is a character that is very much you're running up to the enemies on the field and just hanging around near them so that the balls kind of just circle around you until they hit, you know, enemies and take them out. So it's a very kind of higher risk kind of character.
Yeah,
which is pretty neat kind of idea for a character here. So that's pretty cool. There's two new of the main balls that are the ones you're kind of shooting around, the specials, I guess you'd call them. There is one that is stone, which is not like the iron ball that you see before. But if you do, those two do combo to turn into a steel. And yeah, that's a pretty neat one. The other one is called Fireworks. I've not had this one drop yet by playing several rounds since the update happened, so I'm not sure if there's anything weird for that. Yeah, I'm trying to see what else. And there's new evolutions, combos of these different balls to make new ones, and those are got a few of those so far. The steel one's pretty neat, but yeah, there's a couple that include some of the older ball types. I had one with the fire and poison that turned into this thing called Grimstone, I think it is. That's pretty neat. But yeah, the passives also have some new balls there. There's new passives, I guess. The only one I've had drop that I could recognize was called Iron Onesie, which I think gave more damage to the baby balls that you would shoot out. I've not had much luck with the other drops as far as I could see.
Yep.
Because when you look at this, they added a new section for update balls or whatever. They just like new stuff added in updates to separate them from the main stuff. And so there's a bunch of, you know, blank outlines of these various things. And so that's, I think people are still building up guides for what all the new stuff is and all the new evolutions. So I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. But they did add another new thing, which is Endless Mode, which is like the last building you'll find in one of the stages. That essentially just means after you win the stage, it gives you the option to just continue going, which I think is mostly because you could potentially finish up evolutions, because generally in the course of a run, you get so much time to collect the evolution power-up that lets you do fusions and such. That runs out at a certain point, so if you're trying to have loadout be as much of the comboed items as you can, you often will not be able to get to all that in one run. So this lets you kind of continue on for a while longer and try to get finish up the others, which can be a very useful thing. As far as I've seen, it just keeps track of your high score for it tracks like how many meters you go past as far as you can get through that. And as far as I can tell, that's the only thing it's really keeping track of. So it'll let you know when you've beat your high score and that kind of stuff. But I don't think it has any explicit place where it keeps track of that, but I could be wrong. It might be something there's a stats screen, so it's probably hidden somewhere in there, but that's a nice additional thing to have for that, so
Oh, yeah.
That's been great to see. But yeah, that's been that, and the last game I've put some time into is Fallout 4, which I jumped back into. I was trying to play it on PC and like stupidly assumed if I had a controller in, it would work with a controller, and I was like, oh yeah, no, these they're PC games, they're just like, ah, you can only use mouse and keyboard. And I'm sure there might be some way of making it all work on a controller, but probably wouldn't feel as good as it does on the consoles. So I just like, all right, I'll go back to the PS5 version I have, where I've got a good bit of progress in that.
Yeah.
And basically still screwing around in Diamond City, doing various quests,
Yep.
especially with Nick Valentine solving some a couple of quest mysteries that he had going on. One of them ended up being the quest that starts Far Harbor, the DLC. And I was like, oh, I gotta stop this because I don't want to get locked in over there for a while. I ended up bouncing out of that. But I also ran into a number of bugs. Things like just going to the Creation Club and looking around and making sure I had everything downloaded that I had attached to my account. A number of things that just wouldn't download. For whatever reason, it would just claim it couldn't download it. Like my internet was down, but everything else worked just fine. Things like that. But I had that crash twice when I was just browsing everything, checking for free things and whatnot. And I was like, all right, I'll just play the game. Jumped into that. Found one quest that involves a heist that happened 20 years prior, involving a couple characters that you've met in Diamond City. And that's going to the character that initiates that quest. Once it was like officially handed off to me to start, she, the lady there, would instantly aggro, start fighting me and Nick Valentine. Then a minute later, Nick Valentine would try to send him to one of my bases, which is weird. And then he would aggro on me. If I left the house, everybody in town was aggroed on me. And so I was like, yeah, this is some weird ass bug that's going on, and that's a very Bethesda thing, I guess. That
Yeah.
random stuff, and I didn't know if it was like, is there a dead character that was needed for this to work? Because it just shouldn't have worked if it wasn't able to initiate it. But I had, an autosave I could back up to and kind of try out different things, and nothing I could figure out would get this to work. So that was just annoying. And then, one of the characters, I was like looking at what I had on me, and I had a couple keys for houses, and I was like, I don't know where I got these from. Might have been a quest that involved a bar fight, that maybe some guys got roughed up enough that I took their keys or killed somebody. I don't know. But I was going to their house, and everything was set to like, oh, you shouldn't steal this stuff. I was like, these people aren't here. I have their keys. They're obviously not around anymore. Maybe if I didn't have Nick Valentine with me, he wouldn't have been like, he was sourpuss every time I would pick anything up. So I was like, all right, fine, you jerk. I'll deal with this. But I was exploring around Boston some more. I found in a random part of town, one of the characters dead from Diamond City, with what I think was an assassin near him that was also dead. So I just took all their stuff, and I was like, well, that explains one mystery. I don't know why they were all over here, and obviously got into a fight or whatever. But yeah, just some weird shit. I'm like, all right, it's a very concentrated dose of Bethesda bug energy. So I saved and quit there, and I'll come back at some point. But yeah, that was Fallout 4. Still Fallout 4, so there you
Yeah.
go. That's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I've pretty much still playing more or less the same stuff. I'm still playing Splatoon 3. I have now pretty much just accepted the fact that one, the game is unbalanced as all hell, and that's part of the fun. Or frustration, however you look at it. And also the fact that Splatoon is just not a game that you can really do coordination with, like at all. Like it's you know, like you got to remember when you're playing that game that 9 times out of 10 you're playing with a bunch of kids, and a lot of those kids, you know, they do not know how to organize or anything, especially when it's like, okay, so like a bunch of the like anarchy battles are based around tasks like there's the tower defense, which is literally it's this big like mobile tower that goes along on like this track, and you basically have to try and defend it and get it to these checkpoints that eventually make its way to the opposite side of the course. And you would think that people would figure out, hey, maybe we should totally defend the objective. Not really. Because they all tend to like one of them will, but most of them will basically just go all every man for themselves. And it's especially bad when it comes to like Clan Blitz, which is the reason I hate it so much, because like it's not it's it is in theory it's not difficult to get your head to wrap your head around, but the problem is like if you're ever trying to like actually get to the other side and get, you know, clams to the opposite team, like just so many times nobody's going to help you. It's just like you have no many how many times I've been playing and I'm just like, help me, damn it. Because but yeah, it's still a lot of fun and I still really love it. And yeah, I'm still playing Donkey Kong Country 2. I'm actually at the last world there, which isn't really actually the end of the game for anybody who knows. With the last two Donkey Kong Country games, there's like more game involved after you manage to, you know, beat King K. Rool. But I've been doing that, and I've also I finally earlier this week I started playing Donkey Kong Bonanza, like for serious. And first and foremost, it is really fun. It's an incredibly enjoyable game. It is also extremely weird, even by Nintendo standards. The whole thing is basically DK is, you know, for whatever reason, he's decided to go off to this mining colony to seek his fortune or whatever. And in his case, his fortune is, you know, banana gems, which are basically just big banana-shaped jewels that are edible for some reason. And while he's there, he eventually makes his way underground. And weirdly enough, like the entire game takes place underground. Like that's the whole game. You're essentially because and like even when there's like a blue sky or whatever above you, they're like you're underground. And there's like all because apparently in the Mario universe, the Earth is hollow. Because why not? And as he keeps going forward, he eventually comes across this little talking rock thing that for whatever reason decides to attach itself to him. And eventually, you get this ability that lets you. I'm trying to. It has something to do with music and singing, and you find out that this little rock creature isn't really a rock creature. It's somebody who has been turned into a rock creature, and that somebody is a young 13-year-old Pauline, which brings up so many questions. 'Cause it's like, okay, so does that mean Donkey Kong is like older than Mario is? And that just all this other stuff, it's like, man, that is just bizarre. But the actual gameplay is like really neat, but it's also one of those things where I'm honestly amazed that the Switch 2 can handle it without exploding, because basically the entire world in this game is destructible to some degree. There are like areas that you can't, because eventually you will like hit like sheetrock or something that you can't go further in. But most, like pretty much the entire game area that you play in, you can break it, and you can dig up, you can dig down, you can punch holes into walls, You can grab, you could like yank solid rock out of the earth and use it as a weapon. You can yank solid rock out of the earth and essentially use it to as like a spinny skateboard type thing to traverse the place, you know, as long as it lasts, because it will eventually disintegrate. And what is odd though is it kind of threw me off at first, and it still kind of does, to be completely honest. The way the controls are arranged, because the you know, when you've played Nintendo games for so long, you have an idea of like, you know, what button is supposed to do what. You know, for example, that the jump button is the one that your thumb is always resting on, and the, you know, do whatever button is the one next to it. Not in this case. In this case, the jump button is the A button. And keep in mind that it's the way that the Switch 2's Joy-Con controllers are arranged. It's clockwise, A, B, X, Y. Or is it Y? Yeah, it's A, B, Y. I think it's A, B, Y, X. So, you know, normally in a Nintendo game, you would be pressing where the B button would be to jump, even though it wouldn't normally be the B button, it would be the A button. But because of the way that this game is arranged, because all of the buttons like are sort of like directional, you press like the top button to like punch up to go up into the ceiling, or in this case, you hit the B button to dig down. So instead, you're using the A button, which is normally not the button that would be used for jumping in the way that, you know, the buttons are typically arranged. And it threw me off really badly when I started off. I was like, why am I not jumping? I figured out, oh, it's because I'm pressing the wrong button. But yeah, that game is just, it's obviously like the overall idea is already extremely strange. It gets even weirder because the like underworld that this game takes place in is inhabited by like these sentient rock creatures and these zebra people and these ostrich people, and it's just really, really weird. And basically what you're doing like through every one of these is you're trying to, because there's this like evil corporation called the Void Company that's essentially trying to take over the mining operations in this area. And they have this weird technology where they can like seal off things with this sort of weird, sort of purplish steel-like substance. And you have essentially the way you're like going deeper and deeper through into different worlds is you find like these huge holes that are like plugged up with this stuff, and you have to destroy like the mechanism that's on top of it, and that'll end up getting you know, the like either 3 bananas, or if you just fought a boss, 5 bananas. Once you get down to the other side. And essentially, like, a lot of what this game is you're going to like all of these various villages, and all of them have a village elder, and the village elder is always like 6 times bigger than all the other regular people there. They're always super old, and for whatever reason, they've decided to retire in their old ages to become a DJ. And your whole thing is you're going out, finding these giant, like, vinyl records, putting them on the giant turntable that is in front of them, and then you have Pauline sing a song, and that gets you these, like, they call it a bonanza, basically, you know, hint the name. And it basically gives you this thing where he'll become a stronger gorilla, or he'll become a weird zebra gorilla hybrid, or an ostrich gorilla hybrid. It's really strange. And it's like the whole game is just, it's so odd. And like, even by Nintendo standards, like, I thought that the weirdest they could get was with Super Mario Odyssey, because Super Mario Odyssey was part of the fun of that game, was just all how weird it could get. This one gets very weird. And speaking of Odyssey, you play this game, and like, despite everything I said, you can still very much see the guts of Odyssey in this game. Like, it's still very much arranged the way that Odyssey works. You know, there's all these, you know, collectibles, specifically the banana gems that you have to get. They're not like pointed out to you. You have to actively go out and hunt for them. They all have like specific names associated with where they're located or whatever it was you had to do to get them. And if you die, you end up losing a bunch of your currency, like in Odyssey. But instead of like the coins that you lose in Odyssey, in Bonanza, you lose a bunch of gold, because that's basically what this game. Because in classic Donkey Kong, tradition, there is a ton of collectibles to get. That involves gold, coins, fossils, all kinds of stuff, and all of it used to buy something. But yeah, it's a great game, and I'm really enjoying it, and I absolutely understand why this game got so much critical praise when it came out, but man, is it weird. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So what about you, Danreb?
The main game that I have been playing that I can talk about now that it's out officially is Cairn.
Yeah.
And like this was a game that was like tough to try to pitch to the rest of Smashpad just because like I wanted to be able to clear my table for other games to play. But I went ahead and jumped on this one just because like I'm close to the folks giving these codes out. And yeah, this is a game that I've seen in plenty of preview events before. But I never actually tried them, primarily because I eventually knew that I'd be in this position. So, Cairn is a climbing game. It's going to draw a lot of comparisons to Jusant, which was a Don't Nod game released a couple years ago, and in that game you also climb. But this one is a whole lot more difficult, primarily because it's really a lot more realistic. In Jusant, when you're climbing the mountain, it's typical video game climbing. You just go up the wall and then you just go ahead and climb and press the directional stick to wherever you want to go. And it's all stamina based. Cairn is also stamina based. The main thing is that you don't really see a stamina bar. It's more about really having a feel for everything. So just to really talk about how it's played, the very beginning of the game, which is also the demo, has you in this building where you can go ahead and climb walls, not unlike what you see at rock climbing gyms. And basically, if you go up to a wall, and I'm going to use PS5 as an example because that's what I played on, you stand in front of the wall and you press square and you begin the climbing mechanics. And the game will give you control of whatever limbs you have, your left or right arm, your left or right leg, and then it'll sort of automatically choose the limb that makes the most sense to move. But at the same time, you can also change the controls so that you also have full control of what limbs you want to use. And you do that by pressing the right shoulder button and then picking a button corresponding to whatever limb you want to use. So yeah, you go ahead and figure that out. And basically, you want to, use the right limbs to find the right places on the walls of the mountain to climb. So you want to worry about what you're holding on to. You want to worry about where you're putting, what foot. So for example, when you're at a rock climbing gym, you want to be able to climb the rocks and at the same time have a nice handle of whatever you're going so that you can stay stable. Oftentimes you're going to run into really smooth points on a wall and yeah, you can't climb those and you
Yep.
can, but you'll fall really quickly. So there will be some points in the game where you do have to like take that chance and hope that you have enough grip to move forward. But at the end of the day, it's like if you see nothing but flat surfaces, you're gonna fall and die. So anyway, in that tutorial of the game, you have four sample walls to climb, and then there's a few more that are more advanced. I thought I really had a handout what I was doing, and I tried the advanced walls, and I just sucked. So I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna go ahead and start the climb. So I go ahead and start the real climb. I end up falling down a lot, and it took me a while to really understand how to do things. Like for example, there's when you look at each climbing wall or each part of the mountain, you want to be able to plan where you're going to start and hopefully end up at. And a lot of other publications will call this the Dark Souls of climbing games, comparing every part of the mountain to a certain boss because you have to tackle it a certain way, or you want to use your styles of fighting in order to kill these bosses, or in this case, you want to be able to use your use every tool in your climbing arsenal to go ahead and get through. And I definitely agree with that notion. Anyway, it took me an hour, more than an hour, to actually finish that first part of the climb. And I found out that I was only on the training mountain. I was not on the actual mountain that I was that the game's all about. So in this game, you play this climber named Ava, and she is setting off to be the first person to climb Mount Kami. It's an imaginary mountain, it's not real, but at the end of the day, pretend you're climbing Everest. This is not something you're going to be able to do overnight. It's not going to be something that you're going to be doing in a week. Like, this will take multiple weeks to finish, and it's really cool just seeing the way time passes in this game. I talked about charting your path up the mountain, but at the same time, you have to consider things like how cold it is, what the weather's like. If it's raining, no, it's not going to be the best idea to climb, just like it was in Legend of in Breath of the Wild. Like, were you able to climb hills in the rain? No, probably not. In fact, you can also get hit by thunder and die. Cairn, it's the same sort of thing. Thunder is not a thing, but you do have to worry about inclement weather because the game is also a survival game. You have to worry about how much Ava's eaten. You have to worry about making sure she doesn't go thirsty. You have to make sure that she stays warm. And you also have to make sure that she gets her rest. So as you're climbing this mountain, like, your reward is really just finding a surface that you can stand and walk on. And then from there, you can go ahead and make camp. When you make camp, you can go ahead and cook things. That way you're able to give Ava a warm meal. And at the same time, you have this thing with you called the climb bot. I liken him to like a little Wally because it'll just join you on your climb and give you things that might help you. Like, for example, you do have these nails you can use to plunge into the wall and make sure that you can stay stable, because there are some points in the game where you actually have to hang the tent on the mountain rather than actually be there on a flat surface. And I thought all that was rather interesting. You also do find various characters in the game who alive and dead. Like, you will find people climbing with you. You see this rookie amateur climber who tries to make a relationship with you, but Ava is sort of an antisocial person, so it was really tough to see that happen. You also come across somebody who has tried to tackle his way to the top, but didn't do it, so somehow made his home on that mountain. And you'll also find a lot of dead people, as I mentioned. A lot of and nobody has ever completed this climb, so it's interesting just going about the environmental storytelling as you go on from here. Like, the game is very much a climbing game, but also at the same time, it has that walking simulator sort of Life is Strange kind of feel. And in fact, when you look at the game is actually very reminiscent of the old Walking Dead Telltale games, just because of the cel-shaded look to them. I do think it sort of looks dated, but at the end of the day, I am really impressed at how much detail they put into each of the formations of the rock in the mountain. Like, you can all the parts you can climb, all the parts you can put your feet on, and all that. And like, it was a heck of a journey. It took me about 10 to 15 hours to finish. And then as I f after I finished the game, I actually started over again with a permadeath walkthrough. And I'm not dead yet. I'm actually halfway through, and I'm really like re really proud of where I've gotten so far. In this game, you will die, and the cool thing is that whenever you do die, you sort of see where you've started at the very beginning. Because at the end of the day, like, you do feel like you're really improving, even though you are doing all sorts of damage to your body, and it's pretty cool in that regard. I mentioned earlier that you'll find a lot of like corpses and whatever it may be. When you find them, you can loot them to find different things that you can either eat or help you on your journey. Like, there's one part that I remember early on in the game where this person had a map, and you could see the quote unquote easy ways and hard ways to climb that section of the mountain. And yeah, like, it was all really interesting. I mentioned at the top of what I was talking about, where sometimes you'll find some smooth, unclimbable surfaces, and you have to go ahead and take a risk and climb them. And it's really cool just hoping that you're able to do it. And getting to like some sort of base where you can just go ahead and find footing, and then all of a sudden it turns into a cutscene because you ended up completing that. Like, the amount of satisfaction you get from that is pretty awesome. Especially considering the fact that, you know, as far as the great outdoors, like, I do understand how this is like. It talked about hiking Half Dome in Yosemite, and that was a more than 15-hour trip, you know, to the top and back down. And I remember, like, always looking back to where I started, and I did that in Cairn, and it very much, like, had that same feeling with me. So, yeah. It's definitely something I appreciate. I thought that the reviews would be more divisive, so I am actually pleasantly surprised to see that we're getting nines, eight nines, and tens across the board. And yeah, this is a really, really solid title. If you're looking for something that is nice in isolation and at the same time, like, is difficult, but the juice is worth the squeeze, I would definitely recommend Cairn. I think the game is like $25 on PS5 and PC, and yeah, it's definitely a good one, and I'm looking forward to what the game Bakers does next. Prior to this, they did Fury and Haven. Both of those were good, but I really think they hit it out of the park with Cairn. Excellent game. And yeah, that's about it for me.
All right. So yeah, let's get to some news. And our first up here is some subscription news for PlayStation Plus Essential. They announced their lineup for the monthly games. First up here for PS5 is Undisputed. This is a boxing game. One that went in early access for quite a while and finally came out, I think, a year or two ago. Supposedly pretty decent, so this is one that you can check out. See what a boxing game looks like in, you know, the modern age. There's that for PS5 and PS4. Subnautica Below Zero is the second game, one that is very good if you like the first game. Then try this one out. It is similar. So the environment is set in like a frigid Arctic area. So you're kind of dealing with body heat as a whole thing. But conveniently, there are plants that give you heat and all that when you're near them. So you're dealing with that. But you get to deal with a lot of new fun creatures, you know, some that are very much like alien penguins and all that kind of stuff. So really fun one. Definitely recommend checking that one out. Then for PS5 and PS4, Ultros. This is also a very fun game. This is a Metroid game with a really unique art style to it that, once you kind of get out of the intro area, you're kind of going through this kind of like Groundhog Day-esque like cycle of time, trying to go through the loop and figure out sort of where you need to go for different things. So yeah, that's one that's really well done. And then they end here on the PS4 with Ace Combat 7: Skies Unknown. They announced a while ago they weren't doing any more PS4 games, but here this one goes. So I assume it's mainly because Ace Combat 8 is coming out later this year, so they want to give people as many chances to check out Ace Combat 7 and get into it before they play the new game. And I've heard a lot of good things about this one, so yeah. But yeah, anything here you're looking to check out, Brandon?
Well, I'm definitely wanting to play Subnautica. That one looks good, and I also want to play Ultros because it looks really good. Might play Ace Combat. It's been a while since I've played an Ace Combat game, but we'll see. But yeah, it's a pretty good month, I won't lie.
Yeah, how about you, Daniel?
The main thing for me is definitely Ace Combat 7. I've never actually played an Ace Combat game. I very much enjoyed Star Fox Assault, which was, I believe, developed by the same people at Bandai Namco that did the Ace Combat games. So it's definitely something I want to try out, especially when before 8 comes out sometime this year. Ultros also looks interesting, but I typically don't spend a whole lot of time with those games. So that's pretty much it for me this month.
So yeah, those will be available on Tuesday, the 3rd. So people will check them out then. The next up here, on also kind of related subscription news, Nintendo announced the lineup for the Virtual Boy app on Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack, as well as that you can order the headset or the cardboard headsets if you want ahead of launch on the 17th, February 17th. Let's see, they have 7 games for launch: 3D Tetris, Galactic Pinball, Golf, The Mansion of Innsmouth, Red Alarm, Teleroboxer, and Virtual Boy Wario Land. And then they're going to have the other, let's see, 9 games that'll release piecemeal over the rest of the year, 2 of which were never released. D Hopper is one of those, and Zero Racers is the other one that had not been released. And I don't think even in like a Star Fox 2 kind of state where it's like partial builds or whatever, I think these are pretty much going to be brand new for the vast majority of people. So that's really cool. The other games they have here: Mario Clash, Mario Tennis, Jack Bros, which, if you don't know that one, that is an Atlus game featuring that Jack as a character in the platformer. That's kind of a very weird introduction that probably a lot of people in Japan had for that. Because yeah, that's just a weird way to be introduced to that character. There's Space Invaders Virtual Collection, Vertical Force, Virtual Bowling, V Tetris, and yeah, and Zero Racers and D Hopper. They're also mentioned that a changed screen color feature will be arriving later this year as well in updates. And I believe the app will support rewind, save states, and the button remapping stuff. So that's neat. I think it would have been just better just to put them all available right away. You're expecting people to spend money on a headset to be able to use it. Just give them the what is this? 16 games? They're gonna have 16 games at once. How will they check it out? By using the damn thing they ordered and are getting in the middle of February. Fortunately, I don't think there's any way to check it out without the app, but maybe people will figure out a trick or something. But yeah, there you go for that. So let's see, what else do we have here? We got a game coming out later this month, the Disney Afternoon Collection, that had technically come out already on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, but that was under, I think, Capcom published that. This release is under Atari, as a lot of these are now. Especially, I guess this is a Digital Eclipse collection. I could be wrong on that. So it features Tailspin, Darkwing Duck, Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers 1 and 2, DuckTales 1 and 2, but they're adding 2 new games for this release that's at the moment is going to be exclusive to the Switch and Switch 2 for this, which are Goof Troop for the Super Nintendo and Bonkers for the Super Nintendo. So there's a second game featuring an orange bobcat coming to consoles this year. Is another thing to see. But yeah, you'll be able to get that on February 26th. I think they're going to be doing a physical release. Yeah, the full game cartridge, sticker sheets, postcards, milk caps, the reversible cover, shipping in May for that, but digitally will be out in February. So that's neat. I don't know that I've ever played any of these new games, at least that they added.
Yeah, I've never actually played any of these, but I definitely do remember seeing them in a lot of ads and, throughout walking around Kmart and Target in my childhood. I don't know if they're actually any good, but I don't know. I don't really have much of the desire to go back and try these. I do know that some people like think that they're nice, but other than being a nostalgia trip, I don't really know that I'd jump into this. It is interesting too that, as you mentioned, Capcom did publish this in the past. Now all of a sudden, Atari's doing it. So I wonder like what's up with the rights there. But at the same time, Atari's been doing a real good job with the remakes, whether they're Digital Eclipse or not. So That's pretty cool. The one thing that like would get me to jump in and play these is sort of like what that Rugrats game did a couple years ago, where they had like a modern look, but at the same time retaining all the gameplay elements. But these don't appear to do that, so it's probably not in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. And I believe also I forgot to mention this, the Goof Troop game was one of Shinji Mikami's earliest titles that he worked on. So that's a fun little thing before he, you know, became known for Resident Evil and some of the other stuff at Capcom. That was one of his earliest games. It's always fun to see those kind of guys be like, oh, I worked on a kid's game. But yeah, there you go. Let's see. We also got, the Scott Pilgrim EX game is coming out March 3rd, for I think pretty much everything. PS5, PS4, Xbox, Switch, and PC. This will be, I believe, a $30 game. And yeah, that's they announced two new characters that they're adding to the game. One is Matthew Patel, who I believe is the first character in the original movie and comic that Scott fights. And then Robot 01, which is one of the robots that's created by the Katayanagi twins. So that's a character that does a lot of projectile attacks and such. So yeah, there's some cool stuff to this game.
Yeah, the release date for March 3 was actually a surprise. I remember seeing a Comic-Con panel last year, and it really seemed like it would be another summer game. But yeah, it's definitely cool seeing it moved up. This is one that I'm actually really looking forward to. I actually drafted it in my Fantasy Critic draft. So yeah, hopefully that this does well. But yeah, the reason why I'm looking forward to it is because the original one was solid, but it looks like this one takes more Zelda elements on its top-down approach, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they pull that off.
Yeah, there you go for that one. Also coming out in March, WWE 2K26, depending on how much you want to spend on it. It's out March 13th for most people, and March 6th for the premium editions, which they have, I think, at least two of them. Maybe three. King of King, Attitude Era, and Monday Night Wars editions. It's 7 days early access, which is ridiculous there. They're adding a lot to the game. Suppose it'll have 400 wrestlers at launch, which is a lot. We're gonna have a lot of classic wrestlers, NXT wrestlers, legends, Hall of Famers, and all that. They're adding four new match types: the I Quit match, the Inferno match, three stages of hell, and a dumpster match. As well as the ability to stack tables in table matches, as well as some new objects for any of the hardcore matches, shopping carts and thumbtacks, and more interactive environments or larger interactive environments. So yeah, that's kind of neat there. We're also adding the commentary team of Booker T and Wade Barrett as another one that you can hear. Let's see, the showcase is based on CM Punk, and especially being like, what if he didn't leave WWE for 10 years? Doing unknown stuff they will never talk about. So fantasy matches there for a chunk of that. What else they're doing? The Island is now available on PC. PC players are now allowed to access the main microtransaction area of the game. So that's good for them. They're doing things for all the other modes. The other thing they're doing instead of DLC passes is they're doing battle passes for this. They're calling them ringside passes. Let's see, they have 60 free tiers and 40 premium tiers that are available with new wrestlers and gear and all that kind of stuff to unlock. Which is going to be fun to see how people react to that stuff. Before you just get the pass on the cheap or whatever included with the premium editions and just use your wrestlers and not have to fucking play a bunch of the game to unlock them. But now they're gonna do that stuff. I think the pre-order is Joe Hendry, a TNA wrestler. So he's a very popular wrestler with a great intro.
Yeah, he actually signed with WWE a month ago, so he's no longer a TNA wrestler.
I guess for the Switch 2, they're adding motion stuff and touchscreen stuff that you can do. So that's great. It seems like I think the other big thing is the big problem with the creator wrestler stuff and all that is that it is localized to that platform. So if people make, Japanese wrestlers or AEW or whatever other wrestlers that are out there that aren't legally assigned to the WWE roster. That stuff is only available on that platform versus being able to be available to all platforms. And they're trying to figure that stuff out. I believe they said they double the amount of wrestlers and images you can upload to the servers on that stuff. So that's good. You also get a lot of bullshit, especially the images. People can upload whatever. You get like Trump shit and all that added to it. It's all fun. So yeah, they're doing all that stuff. So it seems like they're doing a decent job of improving things for this. So that's cool. And I think they also, I read that like, oh, the physics are more like WWE 2K11. I'm like, boy, that's ages ago. I'm sure the people that played every single game know exactly what that means. I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, I've only gotten into the WWE 2K games prior to the year they messed up on. I forget which one that is, but yeah, they've been mostly pretty solid. But with every release, I never spend more than a few hours on it, just because like I just don't find the match-to-match gameplay to be that enjoyable. For me, it's always been about the Superstar Showcase. I can't tell based on the information here whether it's on Triple H or simply CM Punk or both. That being said, I do care about both those guys, so that's definitely something I would want to check out. I don't know who's who. And the other thing is like there's just so many versions and I don't know what's going to be the ideal one to have, just because ever since last year's they've really gone head first into the whole microtransaction-y 2K, just 2K sports way of doing things, and that's just also made it unenjoyable for me. So that's rough there. Well, Phil will be on the review, so he'll be the one talking about what to enjoy there. But I will say, if I was the kind of person who judged a book by its cover and had to make a choice from here, I like all four covers. Like, CM Punk's dope, Triple H's dope. I love the Attitude Era stuff. I love the NWO stuff. So yeah, I think they've really got it good with the marketing. I guess the rough thing is I don't know how much money these WWE games make with their microtransactions. Because again, I have been somebody that worked on a mobile game that didn't do too well. Because the WWE gamers are pretty smart. Or smarter than we give them credit for. So I'm wondering if they're really gonna, catch the nickel and diming. But at the same time, when it comes to 2K Sports, the actual games and gameplay of whatever the sport is, whether it's wrestling, golf, basketball, like they're all good. The core game is good. I don't know if anybody's gonna care about the island stuff, but yeah, we'll go from there. But yeah. Everything looks cool. The marketing looks cool. Royal Rumble was last night, and I hated it. So I don't know. It's been a down year for WWE for me, and like I have been gung ho over these past 3 years, but this is one year where I'm just like, it's not for me right now. And I hope they improve things, especially on the road to WrestleMania.
From what I can see on these different versions, it's ridiculous. The King of Kings edition gets you playable superstars, Triple H 98, Stephanie McMahon at 00, and a Triple H signature taunt emote for the island, which is like, I don't, what?
The taunt is probably going to be suck it. That'll be my guess.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it'll just be him pouring a bottle of water on his hair, spitting it out. But yeah, you'll be able to have the hair test. You can see how good that runs on a PS5 Pro and a Series X. The Attitude Era one's $130. That gets you Ringside Pass Premium Seasons 1 through 4. Plus the Attitude Era pack that gets you a bunch of versions of the wrestlers from those eras. And yeah, a bunch of Thumb Across the Neck from the Undertaker emote. Shawn Michaels DX Crotch Chop emote. And a Raw's War 98 arena. And you get a Superstar Mega Boost. Uh-huh. Gets you 200 my superstar attribute points for My Rise plus 100,000 BC. Like, this is nonsense what's in here. Barely understand it because I've seen enough of the NBA 2K stuff.
Yeah, it sounds like, yeah, pay $100 so you don't got to play 100 hours.
Yeah. Ooh, and the $150 Monday Night War edition gets you a DDP bang emote for the island.
Uh-huh.
As well as, like, yeah, Shawn Michaels DX, Macho Man Randy Savage 98, Roddy Piper 98, WCW Thunder 98 Arena, the thing everybody wanted from that. So yeah, there's Persona cards. Say 3 WrestleMania 42 Superstar Persona cards. Okay, I don't know, I've lost it with that Persona cards. Okay, whatever. So yeah, that'll be out in March. Let's see, MLB The Show's 26. We'll be out March 17th. I think this is earlier than they've done in the past years. And yeah, the cover athlete here is Aaron Judge. They sent out a weird email the day before they announced all of this that they were not going to have a new cover athlete, which is like, okay, that means they're either repeating one of the previous ones or doing something weird with it. Ended up being a repeat of Aaron Judge, who... I guess it's a solid choice. I think the one they're putting on the cover is him in the USA uniform, because the World Baseball Classic is coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a neat thing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. I'm trying to see what else they have here. They're going to show off the gameplay in a new trailer sometime this week. February 3rd for that. Okay, that'll be cool. They're doing pre-orders on that day as well, so people would check those out. Yeah, they're going to add the World Baseball Classic tournament to Diamond Dynasty, so that's something that they'll have an event for that. Yeah. We'll find out more about gameplay stuff they're doing. This will be on PS5, Xbox, and Switch still. I imagine the Switch version will have some improvements when played on a Switch 2. I believe last year's game ran much steadier on a Switch 2 than it did on the Switch, so that'll be good. PC players are still mad because they don't have it yet. That may happen. I don't know. I don't know if that's an MLB thing or whatever, but yeah, I'm excited for this. Last year's game might be their best game in the series so far, and so I'm hoping they start adding some more cool stuff for this one, so we'll see. But yeah, that's exciting. Then our last March game here is Damon and Baby. That is going to be out March 25th. This is published by Arc System Works, or made by Arc System Works. Might be self-published as well, but this is the weird little game where you are playing as the Demon Lord Damon, who embarks on a journey to break a curse, accompanied by a mysterious child that has been entrusted to him through the final wish of his late best friend. While Damon expected to receive a soul as his reward, his friend passes away and ascends to heaven before the deal is sealed. And now, due to a breach of contract, Damon has lost his demonic powers. And the curse has bound him to the child, making it impossible for them to be separated by more than a short distance. So he sets off for the celestial realm with the baby, only find himself hunted by relentless demons determined to snatch the child away. So that's going to be one of those kind of games. Not really an escort mission, because I don't think that's the right way to describe it, but you'll have this other character to protect and probably use as a weapon. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, but I played this game during the Game Awards. I have a preview up on the site. It's not really an escort mission kind of thing, like Banjo-Kazooie, you know, where you have Kazooie in your backpack and you're able to do more you're able to do more abilities because of this extra person. So basically, Daemon is, or anyway, the game is a, it's pretty much a twin stick shooter. It's a twin stick shooter and an action RPG sort of put together, because most of the action you'll do from an isometric perspective will just be shooting. But there's also a lot of platforming segments where you'll be able to throw a baby on various rather unreachable places, and then you'll be able to warp where the baby is because they just connected that way. I forget if there's a plot reason or if you even mentioned it. That's not something I paid a whole lot of attention to. But yeah, it was interesting. So the first dungeon like showed off like some of those easy mechanics, and then we jumped somewhere in the middle of the game where you enter a house and have to like get to a certain room. And in order to get there, you have to like examine a whole bunch of things while clearing out hordes of enemies. And it kind of felt like a detective game in that sense, because you had to like find X items or different keys in order to get through. It didn't feel like Zelda. It definitely just felt like an exploration game in that sense. So game is trying a lot of different things. I wouldn't say it's particularly good in any single one of them except for the combat part. But yeah, like there's a lot of promise in this game. I am a little bit surprised to see that it's being released so soon. I thought it could use a whole lot more polish when I played that build that I played, but yeah, we'll see. It's definitely interesting.
Yeah, they're gonna call that mechanic the baby jump,
Yeah,
as what they
there, it makes
mention
sense.
here. So yeah, there's that. That's one to keep an eye on. And the last game we have here, Tomodachi Life: Living the Dream. There was a direct showing this off, showed off a bunch of aspects of it that looks pretty neat, and it shows the age of the me when they start this thing, and they're like, "Do you remember me's when those were a thing?"
Yeah.
And it's like, "Yeah, it's been a while since you've made me's like a thing that you dealt with in a Nintendo platform since pretty much like the 3DS and Wii U." But yeah, they show off a bunch of stuff here, going around, especially kind of showing off one of the big things, because if you remember the original game, the big controversy was that there were no same-sex relationships you could have, or any sort of non binary characters, and that is now a thing here. When you make characters, you can set like what they're attracted to, like male, female, or non-binary as an option, so you can have that kind of stuff when you're making characters for that. So that is pretty cool to see. Of
Yep.
course, that means that the shitty people are extra mad now.
Yeah. Even though, and let's keep this in mind, Nintendo promised this all the way back in 2014. So,
Yeah,
like,
you can go watch a Last Week Tonight bits in John Oliver's first season on that show, talking about this and having a fun like skit of the Mushroom Kingdom experiencing the legalization of gay marriage. How that all goes, so that's fun. How long ago it was. Let's see. Yeah, you can make a bunch of me's. They have a weird get help system that you answer questions about their facial features. Or you can just build them from scratch, get them how you look. No online system for sharing them, as far as I can see here. But they have all the same kind of relationship stuff you've experienced from the previous edition of the game. You can have eight residents living together as roommates. Yeah, there's shops and facilities for them to go to. House workshop, like an artsy workshop to design pets for me characters, draft up custom drinks, sketch a resident's favorite TV show, decorate a special item of clothing, draw the exteriors of a house and ground tiles, and create original items for your island too. Yeah, you can also design a lot of the part of the island in a very kind of Animal Crossing kind of way. And yeah, a bunch of other stuff they talk about here. And yeah, the one big caveat they have talked about is that the sharing features for this game, as far as like taking screenshots and video and easily sharing them, are going to be limited for this game. I'm gonna guess to make it harder to do weird Charlie Kirk stuff and whatnot. But you can still, obviously, people still use their phones to take pictures of the screen or whatever. People that have key capture setups can still do that, but you will not have the ability to, when you take video and screenshots, to have it automatically show up in the phone app to share that way. They're kind of trying to make it a little bit harder, but I don't know that it would really change much for what people will do for that. So yeah, that's kind of a lot of what's here. The video's not too long. It's like 20 minutes to watch, and it kind of goes through a bunch of weird scenarios and all that. And apparently the European version has a slightly different clown model to it, and the Japanese version replaces that with an old man. So when the girl that they focus on throughout this gets rejected by the others, she starts falling in love with the old man. That gets to a weird place. So yeah, what I'm saying is it's a Tomodachi Life game. Weird. There you go. That'll be out April 16th, and yeah, that looks neat.
Yeah, my only experience with the Tomo series is Miitomo, which wasn't really much of anything, but I did enjoy it. I don't know. This is probably something I'll throw some time in. I don't think I'll probably play for more than a few minutes because I'll probably be weirded out by all the archaic custom voice stuff. But I don't know. I know a lot of people love this series, and I'm glad Nintendo is, taking a foot or taking a step in the right direction in regards to inclusivity. So, that's a rare Nintendo in that area. So why not?
Yeah. So yeah, there you go for the new dates we have for these various games. Anything here that's interesting for you, Brandon, you want to check out?
Not really. Honestly, not really.
Would you, Dana?
Yeah, the big one easily, Scott Pilgrim. That's one of my that's one of the games I'm most looking forward to of the year. And then Damon and Baby, I've already played it. We're probably gonna get a code, so I might jump onto that. But it's also gonna be a really, really busy March as we are, so I don't know.
So there you go. Let's get to the rest of the news here. Bandai Namco had a Dragon Ball anniversary event for the 40th anniversary of the Dragon Ball franchise, and they announced one new game that so far is called Age 1000. Features a new character that was designed by Akira Toriyama before he passed, and I believe has other new characters in it that are also of his design. But yeah, it does not really explain anything about what sort of game this is or anything. It just seems like it'll be out in 2027, and they'll show more at the Dragon Ball Games Battle Hour happening in April 18th and 19th in LA, so find out more then. But yeah, that's really not much else here. It's got like a white-haired kid who's wearing something similar to the Gohan's Great Saiyan Man costume, but with Capsule Corp stuff on it. So, really not much to go on here. So, we'll see how that turns out. But, yeah, exciting that they've got a new game coming out at some point. Although, this is pretty early for one of those. All right, so there you go. Let's get to some other news. Highguard came out and was the talk of the internet, mostly by people that wanted to fight in the culture war for all that bullshit there. And then somebody stepped up, Dr. Disrespect, who decided to make it known that yeah, he tweeted out here last week, we took the Lambo to LA to check out hashtag Highguard. Monday, January 26th at 10 a.m. PST, we enter another dimension. And then a picture of like a badge, supposedly from the event, and his streaming setup. To which people were like, wait, he was invited, even though nobody's thought about him in quite a while. A number of people were like, well, if they're working with him for this kind of event, then I don't need to bother with their game kind of stuff. for somebody that was working on the event with the developers was like, no, he was not invited at all. So he made this up for some reason for attention. And that's pretty sad for this guy. Whose entire gimmick is that he's a badass gamer and all that, so.
Yeah.
Then Jeff Gerstmann had a fun follow-up to a really fake badge. It's like, oh yeah, I took the van to LA to deal with all this, and where's the thing? Last week we took the Buick to LA to check out Highgarde. All the same thing, and his badge is just him writing on a piece of paper, launch event, Highgarde. DA underscore buttfucker 7 creator.
Yep.
Nailing how stupid that is, so yeah. That's kind of the most noteworthy thing that happened with Highgarde, really.
Yeah, it's probably also the most positive thing to happen to Highgarde, to just help dunk on Dr. Disrespect there, which I'm always all about. But yeah, like, you know, I have no qualms with, you know, faking it till you make it, but I do have issues with faking it till you make it, and then you make it, and then you fake it some more, and you keep faking, and you're just an asshole. Yeah. And this is exactly the case here. I don't know how he continues to be any sort of relevant when he's lost, like, most of his deals and stuff. I don't know. This is a non-story to me, but at the same time, it's hilarious, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and people that were at the event showed their actual badges, sort of how different his looked. So yeah, fun times. But yeah, let's see what else we got here. GDC survey they put out ahead of the events. They sort of get a bunch of developers to answer a bunch of questions about their thoughts on different things going on in the industry. Particularly the one they highlight here is the topic of layoffs. Let's see, they had 2,300 industry professionals fill this thing out, which you said is 23% less than last year, which is attributed to launching later in the year as a consequence of the event's rebrand. 62% of respondents work at game companies or studios, with 45% of those at independent studios, 31% at AAA studios, 18% at AA, and 6% at co-development studios.
Yeah.
28% of respondents having experienced a layoff in the last 2 years, which is an incredible amount. 33% for developers within the U.S. 17% had been laid off in the last 12 months, compared to 11% the previous year. 7% for the 2024 survey. And yeah, it could be even higher in retrospect, because some respondents could have been laid off multiple times during the period.
Yeah.
For those unfortunate people. Let's see, game designers, including narrative designers, were the worst hit, with 20% losing their jobs, while those in business operations services suffered the least at 8%. 48% of those who had been laid off have not found another job yet. Those at AAA studios are more likely to have encountered layoffs, with 2/3 saying their company had undergone them, compared to only 1/3 for indie studios. And of the students who responded to the survey, 74% were concerned about their future job prospects in the game industry due to layoffs, which is probably low. Should be higher. Yeah. Unionization was another topic here. 82% of those supported unionization for game industry workers, with 5% opposed and 13% unsure. The question structure was updated for the 2026 survey, so a direct comparison can't be made to last year. Support for unionization was highest among workers earning under $200,000 a year, 87%. Those who have been laid off during the past 2 years was 88%, and people younger than 45 was 86%. And no 18 to 24-year-olds were opposed to unionization, 100%.
Yep.
2% said they were part of a company-specific union. 10% were part of an industry-wide union, and 62% were not in a union but interested in joining one. AI was also another topic. 36% said they'd used AI in their work, so uptake varied between disciplines. Those at game studios reported using AI tools 30% less than those at publishing companies, Support teams and marketing PR firms, which was 58%. Business professionals usage at 58% far outweighs most other job disciplines. 47% of upper management reported using AI tools, but only 29% of more junior positions reported doing so. Studio directors were in the middle with 36% of AI usage. The sentiment against generative AI continues to rise. 52% said that generative AI was having a negative impact on the industry. A steady increase from 30% in 2025 and 18% in 2024. Workers in visual and technical arts were 64% against it. Game design and narrative, 63%. And game programming, 59% were most strongly opposed. 7% said generative AI was having a positive impact on the industry, which has been shrinking. It was 21% in 2024, 13% in 2025. Support was highest for executives and those in business operations and services at 19% each. So just in case you want to know where that is. And 30% of responses were opposed to using AI tools in any capacity, citing data sourcing, energy consumption, and the risk of AI replacing jobs. On the engine front, Unreal Engine had 42% of recipients listed as their primary engine versus 30% on Unity. So that's a big win for Unreal Engine, but it also depends on the type of studio. The bigger engines or the bigger studios are more likely to use Unreal. And indies, they divide them between newer indie studios and older indie studios. So 54% of older indie studios were using Unreal Engine or Unity versus newer indie studios, which was 41% Unreal and 40% Unity. Like the premium games was 45% Unreal Engine and 28% Unity. Like AA developers was 59% Unreal, 21% Unity. So, a lot of interesting stuff here, showing clearly that the AI stuff is turned, unless you are an executive. Otherwise, you love it because it's your friend. And way more people are experiencing layoffs than you might have expected, and that's not great. A lot of stuff going on here. So, there you go.
All right.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add to this article because I'm not really a numbers guy, but at the same time, it's like, we knew we were going here. We knew that, the executives would care more about AI than anything else. And, hopefully we continue to get past this stalemate and just get it out of here the way we did with NFTs, even though those are still around in some way too. And when it comes to buzzwords and money, those are always going to be around, and I just hope it passes by. And hopefully the job market finds its way to get better sometime soon. But the fact that we're reporting on a new layoff every week is just,
And speaking of AI.
This next story involves GOG, who has been caught using AI-generated artwork for one of their sales banners. This 2026 sale, which features... seems to suggest this person in it is checking out, old games on their old CRT TV, even though his beanbag is in the corner of the room on the opposite side of the TV. There's a, looks like a Super Nintendo that is melting into the ground, or a cake, poorly made cake or something. There's plenty of things you can look at here and see that this was not made by a human. And people not really happy about this because, GOG is a site, marketplace for preserving old PC games that deserve to be preserved and treasured for the works of art that they are. And so using art for a banner that is not made by a human just seems antithetical to that entire mission. But, maybe their new owner... not too interested in that stuff. They had statement they put out, that is the most weak statement I've seen on this front in a long time. Where their full statement from a GOG spokesperson is, at this time, we won't be able to comment publicly on our internal processes or tools. However, we are aware of the conversations happening around this topic and the assumptions that can go with it. That's it. I mean, like, we'll try to be better or anything. Like, we've seen what you've said, and then move on. Oh, wow. Great job. Great job addressing the criticism in any way. Yeah. I was like, maybe this guy who's been, you know, in charge of GOG for a long time, helped found it, is not a great person to run this, or somebody needs to show them that, you know, people like to see new art made by humans for these sales. Like, Steam has constantly new sales, and the art they get for that is always really interesting to see. So yeah, this just disappointing to see out of GOG for that. So yeah, there's your AI news of the week.
Yeah, everything about this story is unfortunate. You know, just reading the story and reading about what Cosmic Zna Pluxwa, whatever his name is, said. Like, at the same time, like, I do kind of feel for him, you know? Like, he is admitting that it's not his work. But at the same time, it's like, there's also not really, he didn't really care to hide anything. Because if you even take a look at the image, it's like, you know, he could have done more to just, like, reapply some stuff, or, you know, whatever it takes to improve the image. And he clearly did not care. So I don't know. I don't even know what these banners are even for on the GOG pages, because I don't use it. But I don't know. Everything is just weird all around.
Yeah. Those things are just like, hey, here's the sale. You know, here's some art to make it obvious where you go for that. Like you would for anything we have, like piece of art for our articles and such. So.
I would have gone as far as like not use any art if he had to do.
Just put some fucking text on a paint image, MS Paint image. That looked more like a human made it than anything that this is. So yeah, that's your fun story of the week. And we'll end on a bit of a bummer here. Concept, makers of Mighty No. 9 and ReCore, has been dissolved and shut down. Studio founded by Keiji Inafune back in 2010. He left the studio back in 2024, so it's not really a huge surprise they weren't long for the world after that. Let's see, they were acquired by Level 5 at some point 7 years ago, and became Level 5 Osaka office. So I don't know, this still seems to be like Concept themselves being dissolved. I don't know. Kind of sad. Because they made a game for Microsoft that was not very good when it came out. So they got a chance to do a big improvement update on it. They made it like a bit better. Not terrible, but not amazing or anything. But that was kind of the last of the big things that we've really seen from them for the most part here. I feel like a bunch of their people were probably absorbed into Level 5 to the various teams they have there working on. A half dozen things they have right now, so kind of it for Concept as an entity.
I mean, I had a feeling they disappeared off the face of the earth. First of all, I didn't hate ReCore. I never beat it, but I didn't really have much of a problem with that game. And then Mighty No. 9, we already know what happened there. Inafune is kind of at a loss himself, so I don't know. But I don't think this surprises anybody, but at the same time, it does suck.
Yeah, it does. It does.
There you go.
Yeah.
The bummer of the week.
Yeah.
There for students. For being honest, never really made a great game. Like, people had high expectations for Mighty No. 9, and it did not meet that.
Well, I mean, part of that is because people forget that Keiji Inafune is not the creator of Mega Man. Like he sort of became like the face of the franchise, because he started to take over like a much more prominent role. But the reality is, he didn't create Mega Man. He was just one of a group of illustrators.
Yeah, though, if you remember, that was a Kickstarter game, so he
Yeah,
essentially
also, which is another
asking
major
people to
issue.
pay for them to make another Mega Man, and especially a good one. And it didn't help that they didn't fulfill all the platforms. Kind of just went into silent mode on that, in a way that they probably should not have been. Because I think it's the 3DS version that was the one that was canceled, essentially, but people still very much would bring it up anytime. Concept or Mighty Number Nine came up. Like, oh, when we're getting that? Never, seems like. But yeah, they kind of then they tried to bank Mega Man Legends style game that then also went nowhere, and then tried to get a what was it, like an anime going based on this stuff, and that never went anywhere either. It was like a lot of things they tried to do to play off the Mega Man vibes that they wanted for their games, and kind of none of it really panned out as well as they would have liked, which is unfortunate. But yeah, that's pretty much it for them. So yeah, I guess where we're gonna end it here. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
We'll be
No
back
worries.
next week with a new slate of news and things to talk about as February gets rolling. Let me see what else we got coming out. Let's see, where did I put that at? Okay, here it is. Yeah, we've got Neo 3 and Dragon Quest 7 Reimagined being the big ones for this week. That'll be out by the end of the week. Star Sand Island should be out today. But I believe there's also going to be some other games that are out this week, but some smaller stuff from what I can see here. So yeah, that's going to be fun to see. So yeah, time to get some time into these games. I might check out that Cairn because I that seems like baby steps for climbing games for all the
It's not
fun.
as like finicky, but it definitely has like some similar journey vibes to it.
Yeah, because it seems like that is a game for people that don't want to fuck around, but I'm sure there's a little bit of room for fucking around in that.
Oh, there is. There's like not to spoil too much, but you can lick a frog and you can guess what happens then. So,
Okay.
not kidding.
Probably not as much as when Nate gets a hold of fruit and he basically has a freakout session with a very fun camera angle. If you've seen that bit of Baby Steps, where he's freaking out about a banana or an apple or whatever. So yeah, we'll end it there. Thank you. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check out the podcast and select people that may enjoy some new games, as we are getting to some new games here for February. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.
Bye.
See ya.